You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
So any final thoughts on Superman Lives? If you were to, if you think back about it now, how do you feel about it?
Why are you trying to depress me so much? Does anybody got any cyanide or anything I can take?
6 more months before we see Ben Affleck in a bat suit, but you could get an early look at a story of a Superman that might have
lived. In the 90s, Superman actually died, and it was probably for the best that he died because they'd given him a mullet as well.
We put the rights together. Kevin Smith came in with a really great take.
I'm going to write Superman. This is up.
Tim came in shortly thereafter.
I always felt like I was an alien, so I think a lot of people do.
And someone who is wanting to fit in, wants to connect, and at the same time feels this enormous burden to protect.
Thematically, the big thing for Tim was that Superman was an alien.
We wanted to do something that we hadn't seen before without it being ridiculous.
I think that the regenerative suit would have been like something no one's ever seen before. I'll never attempt again.
Now when you think about it, if somebody was like, would you like to see a Nick Cage Superman movie? I'd be like, and yes.
Then watching Nick Cage in an outfit land, it was kind of like, whoa.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Gina Versa from the Waffle Press.
Hey, how's it going? Good to have.
It's going good.
I'm glad you could have me on again.
Thanks for joining me on this special occasion.
You got it.
Yeah. And Gene, it's a special occasion because we are going to be kind of going over what happened at Comic-Con and basically what happened last weekend. So what happened was this week was I've been on vacation all week, so I couldn't really do an episode while I was on vacation. So that's why this episode is much later than expected, because I wanted to do this earlier in the week or on Sunday or Monday, but now we're kind of doing it on a Saturday. So, and it will come out tonight, and it will come out Saturday night. So, so that's why we're kind of doing the episode now versus later or versus earlier. I mean, so to get kind of started, just kind of jumping around a bit. There are a couple things that I wanted to talk about before we, get into the Comic-Con. The one big thing is, first off, I feel for you listeners, one of the first episodes we did on the show, I think it was like episode 4, was we had an episode on John Schnepp's documentary, The Death
The death of
Superman. What happened? And we did that alongside with the review of Ant-Man, and all of us talked about it. I don't remember all who was on the show, but we all talked about it, and it was a really great documentary. And unfortunately, on Thursday, July 19th, we lost the director of that documentary, John Schnepp, due to a catastrophic failure of a stroke. And I did not know John Schnepp as much as some of the other people that have been on the show, like Patrick Campbell, Gene, I think you... did you know him at all?
I interviewed him maybe once or twice for the podcast when his documentary came out. He was at some cons. So I do have an interview on my site with him, and he was really cool about it. He wanted to talk to everyone about the documentary, and we certainly do for a bit. So, I mean, I know of him and I know of his work. I can't, you know, I wish I had the pleasure to know him more, but unfortunately he's gone. So I could just honor him by watching his work.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to take a few moments to basically say thank you, John Schnepp, for all of your hard work and being a really good person. He was, for those who don't know, the director of Metapocalypse, and he was also, of course, he was a host on Collider Hero Show, and then of course the Collider Movie Talk, also formerly known as AMC Movie Talk.
Right.
So, I mean, he's been around, and I just wanted to say, you know, pay a special tribute to Mr. Schnepp, and I'm meeting John Schnepp at all, or I've never been, but primarily just because I've never been to California, but he's just, you know, but he sounded like one of the coolest people. And I was talking to other people about John over the last week and just the impact that he made on people. And yeah, and it's a big loss. And right now, his family is trying to raise the funds to help pay for some of the costs of his surgery, you know, and of all that was included. So I will leave a link in the description of this podcast so you can find it. Please help if you can. If not, please, you know, share on all of your and give some love, all the pain, and Schnepp's family. Gene, I know I've been talking to, I know I took over this, but do you have any more things to say on Schnepp?
I will say that his animated work, everyone should check out. He did a few episodes of the Venture Brothers, which is a really awesome Adult Swim show that's been around for years. And, you know, Metapocalypse is great. I haven't seen all of that, but it's definitely up there in the Adult Swim library. And yeah, just all his work, you know, from like Space Ghost to documentaries to just, you know, his podcasts are just awesome. And there's, you know, a whole library you could watch him from on the internet. So yeah, honor his memory by doing that.
Yes, I agree. Please do. So with that, we're moving on to even to a handful of people, this might be good news, but to most of the internet that I have found, I think we have to address the James Gunn situation at Disney. Again, I know this is not cheerful,
right?
You know, news. We'll get to the cheerful stuff in a little bit, but Gene, since I took over the John Schnepp, do you want to kind of explain what happened with the Guardians of the Galaxy thing? Or, I mean, not the Guardians, with the James Gunn gate or situation?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, James Gunn, he's a very outspoken critic of the Trump administration, and he's been using his platform to kind of speak out against that. And as, you know, any citizen should be at this point. And he's been very outspoken of, you know, a lot of Trump people, and just kind of, you know, just anyone that's really alt-right and all that. And apparently he got targeted by a bunch of alt-right figureheads. I can't pronounce his last name, Mike Sirabuck,
I think it's Cernovich.
Cernovich.
Mike Cernovich.
Yeah, and they uncovered, they, like, uncovered a bunch of old tweets that he made probably in the late 2000s, so like 09, 2010. And this is like when he was doing like Slither and Super and all that, so he wasn't as...
PG porn.
Yeah, PG porn, Jesus. Yeah, this wasn't recent, this was a long time ago. And, you know, because I used to follow him on, I think he had like a blog or like a Facebook in like 2012. And, you know, he was a lot different back then. It seems like, you know, this is a guy that graduated from the Troma Productions to where he is now. And he, you know, it was a lot of unsavory jokes, very inappropriate. You know, you can't really defend those sort of tweets. And they uncovered it and they, you know, started blasting him. And he put out a statement and a couple of tweets of, you know, kind of trying to explain the person he used to be and how he tried to be very, he would be inappropriate and gross to, like, provoke people, to kind of try to be a provocateur. Again, you don't really have to defend it. It's just the context of who he was then. And, you know, he explained that he's not that person anymore. He really changed in how his humor is, but just the, you know, how he changed his tone and how he kind of sees the world and his, like, worldview. And, you know, he doesn't want to offend people or, like, you know, do stuff to piss people off and be gross just for the sake of gross. And, you know, this has been known for James Gunn for a while, because when he got the gig, a big thing was the, he wrote a list of like 50 superheroines he wanted to like sleep with or something. And, you know, some fans dug it up and he got, you know, he apologized. And I feel like that was maybe the start of his change. And you know, I think he's really made amends for the person he used to be, and he's really tried to, kind of be a better person. And yeah, it just really sucks to see this happen to him, because it's not like this was now, it was the person he used to be. And, you know, I feel like everyone could change at some point in their life, even though they're, you know, they may be older and they should have known better, but as long as someone does change, you know, we could all be a better person than our past selves. So that's my statement on it.
I think a teacher from college said, mm-hmm. you know, she was using, and I'm going to use this analogy in order to describe how people can change. Mm-hmm. But in her analogy, she was like, you could be 75 years old and have eaten French fries and burgers all your life, and then decide at that moment, you know what, I'm going to have a salad, and that will change your life. You can say, you know what, I'm going to have more salads, gluten-free diet, I'm going to have more, take sugar out of my diet. You can change no matter what. And I use an analogy because I feel like that's the best way to describe that. It doesn't really matter when someone changes, or I mean, you know, it's a little odd to be in your 40s and making, you know, right. pedophilia jokes,
yeah.
or child jokes, but I mean, it's never too late to change.
Yeah.
And apologize for this behavior in 2012, 2013, and changing his attitude, changing his views, you know, through his movies and through his platform, and even kind of encouraging a more positive message. So he's been, in a way, like the whole, you know, outrage, system of criticizing someone on the internet, you know, and hoping they would change actually did work on James Gunn all these years ago.
Yeah.
So the outrage culture did work, but the problem is, and the reason why the internet edge is a problem of what happened following what happened, you know, at Disney. By the way, Disney, they fired James Gunn. So, right. But the reason why it's kind of problematic, the reason why it's problematic is if we have an outrage culture, we want people to change, and mm-hmm. we do let them go, even though they have already kind of made amends and they've been changing ever since.
Right.
If we do that, it becomes problematic. It becomes even more problematic in trying to, you know, in trying to, you know, use the strategy to, because, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, look, I think Henry Cavill's comments on, you know, worrying about dating because he was, yeah. I think yeah. those, you know, I think those, you know, are problematic, but I don't think it's worthy of, and they're worth being, and he's worth, receiving criticism for it. But at the end of the day, I don't think he should be, you know, not Superman anymore.
Right. Yeah. You should. Yeah. So
I don't think those comments were worthy of that.
No.
I don't think those comments are worthy of something like that.
I mean, yeah,
whereas, and I know. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. You could continue.
You know, and I know some people would be like, well, you know, what about Roseanne? I mean, she got, you know, chopped off the block. But the thing about the Roseanne situation was she's never changed. She's always been called out mm-hmm. for her comments.
Yep.
And I mean, even before, you know, I mean, it was even a joke. It was joked about before the Roseanne reboot. You know, was when's the, you know, ceiling going to fall when, you know, she makes a racist joke or, you know, a Nazi or, you know, makes an, you know, another unfunny Nazi joke or something that's not satirical at all. When, you know, when's that shoe going to drop and what's Disney going to do? And it did drop. The problem was, not a problem, but the thing was she, you know, she got rightfully fired because she showed no consistency in changing or no consistency of not being a racist anymore.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, whereas Gunn over a period of time stopped those tweets and became a better person.
Mm-hmm.
That's so
on the mark. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the situation we're dealing with, and also it's also problematic for the MCU to kind of, I know it's not 100% Kevin Feige in charge, but it's problematic for the MCU's message overall, because one of the things I realized when I rewatched Ant-Man and the Wasp Cousins on vacation was all of these Marvel movies are about redemption. All these characters. I mean, you can make an argument that the Captain America, the first Avenger is based, you know, it's not a redemption story. You can make a case, but all these movies are about characters seeking redemption.
Mm-hmm.
But in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
General theme.
But that's so true about the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. It's so ingrained in what James Gunn's movies were about. And it was so personal and these stories were so personal, or they felt personal because you felt like, you know, not only the character, you know, in a natural way, feel it getting redemptive or becoming redemptive over their bad quandaries, you felt that the director was also changing as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, So that's why the James Gunn thing is so problematic, or James Gunn being problematic. It's even causing more problems because all the actors are like showing support.
Yeah, like the
piece, you know, for
very vocal.
Yeah, I mean, other than like, I think other than maybe I've gotten this wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe I have it wrong, but other than I think Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel are like the only people that haven't spoke out.
Yeah, they haven't.
All,
They haven't said anything as of yet.
As if they haven't said anything yet. So, because everyone else I know, I mean, Sean Gunn, Chris Pratt on his Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana on their Instagram have said something. Sarah Gillen said something on her Twitter. I think Michael Rooker said something.
Michael Rooker.
Yeah,
left.
I mean, all the.
I think Michael Rooker left Twitter over it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, and people are already, you know, and it's already had this ripple effect, you know, over Hollywood, because now people are worried about their tweets. Dan Harmon has, Dan Harmon has, like, for rightful reasons, you know, deleted a video or a video skit he made of, like, a funny video, what was a parody video skit, as they do raping, like a baby doll or something. I can't
remember. Yeah, that was
yeah, and so that's all gone for it. So I mean, it shouldn't play, because especially if this person, you know, is shown, you know, especially if this person has shown that they've changed over time, or if they have matured as filmmakers or artists.
Mm-hmm.
But the overarching problem is, and this is the way I think Cernovich and his people are going to continue attacking people, is that, well, if you're going to get rid of this one person that's done this, you might as well get rid of all of them, regardless of of what they've done, or regardless of the case.
Yes.
Which I don't think is quite fair, because, you know, every person has a different case, you know, and on top, each person is a different, you know, case in terms of how they've been handled. At this Me Too movement, everything has been its own different thing. That's every person that's been accused of, you know, something they have their own, you know, it's been a whole other different story. Doesn't devalue what happened, but it's all, everything has to be taken by its own case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the rehire James Gunn, but not just because I want to see James Gunn finish his trilogy, but because I feel like it was a bit of an overreaction that should have been, I think it's a bit of an overreaction, and also there's this financial benefits to try and keep the boat going.
Yeah. No.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on top of that, we can't give that kind of power away. We can't just allow that to be the thing, because then everyone in Hollywood will eventually get attacked, and then all we're stuck with is people not being able to, you know, express their opinions or be able to, you know, interact with fans, all of that, you know, Rian Johnson, Matt Reeves, Christopher McQuarrie, Joe Carnahan, you know, interacting with their fans on Twitter or Instagram. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, they don't want to risk, you know, losing, you know, a job over, you know, something they posted years ago, or, you know, or because of a movement. So, So yeah, Gene, do you have any more thoughts on this? I've been talking about it for a little while.
I just really hope that he gets rehired. I think it's the best decision to make with all the facts and everything in context. And you know, if Disney fire or keeps the firing of James Gunn, I think some of the cast is going to walk. I can't say for sure, but I have a feeling of that, and it's just like, like Batista, you know, I don't think he'll work without Gunn, and they should really reevaluate the decision they made.
Well, and I'll say this, the act I'll walk off because there's 9 months before Infinity War Part 2 comes out. And they could just write them out of the movies. So, is a shame because, which is a shame, but I mean, that's one way of handling a controversy and wiping your hands free of it is just to be like, sorry guys, it just didn't work out. And it's a shame. Mm-hmm. So, and one more thing about the tweets is that I think Gene and I both agree that tweets are vile and disgusting, and they're disgusting and unfunny. But at the end of the day, these were tweets that were done years ago, and some of them even taken out of context. Mm-hmm. So, they're not that kind of valid anymore. So, yeah. Sorry. All right. So, Gene, are you ready to get into the fun stuff? I think we've depressed every member, depressed every listener.
Yes, of course.
For the one listener that's sticking around, thank you so much. But Gene, I want to get into your Comic-Con experience. Can you describe your Comic-Con experience as a whole this year?
Oh, sure. Well, I did Saturday and Sunday. I had a ticket for, I've been going for 3 years now. I feel like this was the most lax of the cons. Like, there's always, like, a crap ton of people. And it's not to say that there wasn't a crap ton of people, because there was, but it felt like it wasn't as sprawled out. It didn't feel as all-encompassing, like there wasn't as many people shoving and stuff like that outside the convention and inside. But I had a very, I had a pretty good time. I don't really do Hall H. I was telling you before the podcast that I was, I can't do the lines too much. If I want to do lines, I'll go to Disneyland or the DMV or something. But Saturday and Sunday, I was mainly outside. On Saturday, I ran into some people that I knew. I was at the Wired Cafe and I had some stuff, something to drink. I'll say that. it was fun running into fellow podcasters, random people I knew. That's always a good experience. I was on the train with Marty Croft, the co-creator of Land of the Lost, so that was one of the first run-ins I had. He was a very nice gentleman. He was talking to me about Land of the Lost, and apparently that photo got retweeted by Hideo Kojima, because I was wearing a Death Stranding shirt. So that was cool. And, after that, I was just hanging out with some friends. We hit up the Ricksmobile. We were all kind of waiting on the news. The Godzilla trailer, I probably watched like 3 or 4 times that day. Shazam was pretty cool as well. It's just so weird and odd that it's just like big with superheroes, and Zachary Levi is just very goofy in it, and I love that, and it's just different
different than what you usually expect for a DC movie. And Aquaman was cool too. I feel like some of the effects probably need to be finished. But I enjoyed it. I like James Wan, see what he has in store. And, Glass was cool too. So, yeah, I was excited with all the trailers. But, I was just doing, hung out, did some meetups. I got free swag, like a Halloween poster they were giving away. And then I hit up I always try to go to all the parties at Comic-Con, because that's one of the coolest things. Like, I did the Sci-Fi Channel party, and that was really fun. Someone threw up in a human crane machine. It was gross, but I don't know what they expected. And
sounds great.
Yeah, it was great, except the throw up. it was a good first day. And then Sunday was a really chill day. I just, hung around the con, bought some stuff. Nothing really was announced that day. And went home. My train was delayed for 2 hours. So I was just waiting till like 10 a.m. or excuse me, like I didn't get home until like 1 a.m. or something. So that wasn't fun.
Damn.
But it... Yeah, it was a fun, exciting con. It did have some dourness to it, but managed to have a good time.
Okay. So I wanted to kind of jump off first. I wanted to jump off of the Warner Brothers panel, because I feel like that was like...
I think
that was the big panel.
Oh, I said, yeah, that was a very infamous panel.
Yes. It was famous and then also infamous for multiple reasons. And we'll get to that in just a second. But first off, I wanted to talk about the Aquaman trailer, because I feel like that was the one everyone was there, like, waiting to see. And yeah. I think they held that off as long as they could for that trailer. I was following the tweets during the Hall H panel. Yeah. And I was like, okay, they got the Fantastic Beasts up. They got, Shazam. And
yeah.
Godzilla is, like, crashing Twitter. And then you get to, finally to Aquaman, and everyone's like, and the reception's kind of mixed. Because everyone's like, well, the effects are kind of odd, and, or it was things like, well, it's still kind of a goofy premise, and really the best response I can't remember who tweeted it, but someone pointed out that Aquaman is going to basically be a reverse Black Panther, where, it's just ideologies and goals are switched. So I was like, yeah, that actually sounds pretty interesting. So, Gene, what were your thoughts on the Aquaman trailer? We'll just kind of, we'll go from there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it seems very influenced by the Geoff Johns run, Jason Momoa. I really think he could carry that movie very well, no doubt about it. And I was very surprised by how reminds me of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, how adventure-esque it seems. Like, it seems like a very fun adventure movie, and I don't know if I was expecting that, but I'm all in to see that, if that's the movie. That's what the trailer said.
Yeah, here's my thought on the trailers are, this sounds actually pretty cool. Because, look, the Aquaman premise is always going to be super goofy. Like, so, yeah, iffy when you see, you know, a little kid and he's got like, and he's in an aquarium and he's got like a dozen fish behind his back, like ready to, you know, kick ass. Like, it's going to be goofy. It's going to be silly. So for me, and I was going for is it was going for this silly, goofy, but also adventure spectacle. And I think, you know, and I think that totally worked. I think, you know, yeah, you're going to have some, you know, you're going to have great moments when you embrace, you know, the kind of stupidity of your project or the stupidity of your premise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Aquaman, that trailer worked a lot from a known of the Aquaman, the Aquaman panel, but I didn't see it. So yeah, we'll just move on to Shazam.
Yes.
So what? So you mentioned Shazam was looked pretty cool. You like it? What specific things did you like from Shazam?
I just Zachary Levi, number one. He is just so goofy as I guess he's. I don't know if he's Shazam or Captain Marvel. They are not saying it at this point for obvious
Shazam.
Reasons.
Shazam.
Okay, that's what he's called.
Yeah, we'll just stick to Shazam because there's this, like, we want to stay away from that as much as possible.
Sure. And yeah, you know, I love Zachary Levi in this role because he's just a big kid. And it's, you know, if you're like 12 or something, what it seems like what you would do if you had superpowers.
And, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, for me, the Shazam trailer, just to go through it very briefly, the Shazam trailer, it's just a lot of fun. Like, it just looks like, you know, like, you know, again, like the Aquaman trailer, like, you're finding kind of, you know, I hate to say stupidity, because stupidity is derogatory, mm-hmm. but that's kind of the, but you know what, that's racing the stupidity of these, you know, of this premise is, hey, a kid, you know, hey, kid gets superpowers, and he becomes 6 foot, you know, 3 Zachary Levi, all but kick ass and funny Superman. So, I don't know. I admire the movie. Just looks fun. Like, yeah, I mean, some people pointed out that it looks kind of cold, like. Cold, or it looks kind of cold as you know, dark. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, well, they did winter of 2018, so
yeah.
There's only so much you can do.
Yeah,
I thought Shazam was a lot of fun. Took away from it the most was how much it resembled so much of the DC CW verse.
Hmm.
Like, visually, it's like all the sets and the look of it felt very much like, you know, that Greg Berlanti CW verse. To me, it did.
Yeah. It did. It did a little bit in the color correction. I'll agree to that.
Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, Shazam was kind of, I think for me, it kind of just looks to me like with Shazam, they're going more, when they're Earthbound stuff, they're going to do more of that style of that approach. But then, you know, Aquaman's going to be the, you know, big bombastic, you know, goofy Raiders of the Lost Ark movie you mentioned.
Yeah.
And while we're still in DC, they did show from Wonder Woman 84 that was not released, but they did show a scene that was shot in last month, and the response was really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gene, do you have any more thoughts on T-Panel before we get into Godzilla?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, so Godzilla Kings of Monsters is the Mad Max Fury Road trailer of this year.
Okay.
Like, yeah. it blew everyone away.
Yes, it certainly blew me away, yeah.
And it blew everyone away because epic it was, or how big it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the fear that everyone had, Gareth Edwards was replaced by Mike Doherty, per se, but, you know, just the replacing of Gareth Edwards was, are we going to lose that epic scale, that mythical, you know, aesthetic to, and I feel like I'm just going to make it bigger and more wide scale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it looks like here. He is adding mythicness to all these monsters, to not only Godzilla, but to Mothra, to Rodan. What are some of the other monsters?
Ghidorah, King Ghidorah. And they said there might be maybe some cameos you'll see of other monsters in the movie. So we'll see.
Okay. So, Gene, what do you think of Godzilla Kings of Monsters?
Oh, King of the Monsters?
Oh, okay, yeah. Yes.
That's good. I love that trailer. That I've watched it maybe 15 or 16 times already. It is definitely the Mad Max of monster movies, it's seeming like. I love Godzilla. I cannot be happier seeing how they're, you know, presenting Godzilla in the context of this movie, and just everything about that trailer looked amazing. All the designs from Rodan, where his, just the scale of Rodan, where he causes like, it seems like kind of like mini tornadoes, like when he just, or like mini like shot, like, sonic booms or something, like when he's shockwaves, yeah, like when he just flies across an area and he just destroys stuff, to just like the majestic nature of Mothra, because she's like the only good monster pretty much in all the Toho movies. She has her own like agency, and you know, she's the only one to often beat Godzilla, so she's a very underrated kaiju. And yeah, I love it. The story looks very interesting, with like it's a mother-daughter story, it seems like, and kind of focused on like on divorce a little bit, so maybe some Spielberg qualities maybe. But yeah, just I'm very excited for it, and I cannot stress how much I love this trailer.
It's a great trailer, and you're hitting it right on the mark, Gene, on everything. I mean, the Spielbergness, but also like the scale of it. You're seeing bits and pieces of like these monsters can have on land, you know, and it's just you see it and it feels visceral and it feels real and it feels doomsday like. Yeah. And so, yeah, I love it. My only hope for Godzilla King of the Monsters is that I would like more out of these characters. I want to know more about these human characters, because I feel like my problem with Godzilla is that why on earth would you hire all these great actors like Sally Hawkins and Elizabeth Olsen, David Strahan, all those actors, basically just gonna have them recite lines.
Yes, yeah.
yeah. So I hope there is more to them, because, I mean, all these other legendary monsters movies, these movies have essentially these movies pass, and I see them utilize this cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, this movie, you have Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, Millie Bobby Brown, Ice Cube's son, I always forget his name, O'Shea Jackson. O'Shea Jackson.
Yeah, Ken Watanabe is also coming back.
I mean, and Charles Dance. I mean, yeah, well, all these great actors, please.
Ken Watanabe is also coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I hope Mike Doherty, and I understand the purpose of not using the characters in the first movie, or not like making them such a central part of the movie. I understand why, but yeah. I feel like it's such a waste.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, Aaron Taylor Johnson's character was very forgettable.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I agree. And I think that's part of my problem. Like,
Ford Brody, R.I.P.
R.I.P. Yeah, I mean, it's just, my thing is, I don't really care about I didn't care about the characters, and if you're going to make the perspective of these attacks on the ground level Edwards did, then maybe you should invest a little bit in these characters other than, you know, making the wife and son kind of props to Aaron Taylor Johnson's character. And it's just, you know, it's just very different things. You know, and I know that, you know, in the grand scheme of Godzilla, it didn't mean that in the mind. But still, I'm like, Edward, the camera on the ground, maybe you should invest in some of the people that are on the ground who are getting, you know, plummeted by, you know, these monsters fighting.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So yeah, I Monsters, it's a great trailer. I can't wait to see it on the big screen. Cause I've only seen my laptop and, my phone. So I can't wait big screen in full HD in all its glory. So, Gene, we have two more trailers, and then we'll wrap this up, unless there was another trailer. But the other trailer that we have, WP panel, and we'll get actually talk about the panel itself and why it was maybe the wrong move, is the Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna go ahead and say it, Gene. And it doesn't have as much to do with Johnny, much more to do with the campaign. I'm just not that in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see this new trailer, I'll be honest. And yeah, just nothing about it really excites me. And yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I did like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I did like it quite a bit, and I was, you know, I was kind of curious to see where it would go, especially since you're going to have Grindelwald and Dumbledore in the next couple movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem I have with The Crimes of Grindelwald is not only did you cast Johnny Depp in this movie, you know, who, aside from all the assault, you know, accusations, because that's what we have to say on the show, they're all, aside from all the accusations, that he's been accused of, despite all that, he's not been a really good actor. Like, he's just not bringing the A game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's just like, no one cares, and no one cares about Johnny Depp. And A, you brought an actor who's just basically just there because he wants to be in makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just the ethical reasons as well as why you would not want Johnny Depp, and you know, if you want to get into that and just all the fan outcry, and just rightfully so, that, you know, this guy's probably an abusive asshole and does not seem like a good person, and they keep kind of forcing him down like moviegoers' throats. And yeah, it's just, yeah, it's very, very ill-advised and just crappy, the whole situation.
I don't mind the Colin Farrell twist in the first movie. I think it would have probably just been better off.
Yeah, well, I was going to say if it was any other movie too.
Yeah. If it led to any other big surprise reveal, like if it was, I'm just throwing this out there, if it was just like Hugh Jackman,
yeah,
as Grindelwald, then I think people would have been more open to it than they currently are, because the problem with Grindelwald, as we have gotten from the trailers and from this, the problem with Grindelwald is that it's so hard to believe that Dumbledore would have any affection for this character,
right?
Which,
that's such an interesting thread that was in the books, Dumbledore's tempting Dumbledore to go into, you know, believe in like pretty much like fascist beliefs, and you know, also the subtext that they were also lovers, and it seems like the films are ignoring both of that, and you know, that's some of the most compelling stuff about those two characters as well, you know.
And it is everything's just stacking up against the crimes of Grindelwald, and for this show I will see it. For this show.
Yeah.
I'll still see it. But I don't know. I can't get excited. I just can't, like, I've seen two trailers and I'm not that excited.
Yeah, there's with trailers and you're just kind of like, you know, nothing about that looks good.
So moving on from that, we're going to talk about, I think this will be the last trailer we talk about because I don't remember any more trailers that dropped. Maybe you can help. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong.
Glass.
Yes.
Yeah. Glass looked really great.
And I do. And for me, this was my favorite trailer from Comic-Con. Because it's like, yeah, it's a little long for a trailer. But the thing is, it just builds and builds and builds to an exciting climax. And even though it's grounded, which is not a problem for this franchise, it's not a problem that it's grounded. Even though it's grounded, it still has the trademarks of a fun comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I just kind of love this universe that M. Night Shyamalan has kind of been snowballing on. Because I love the design of, and it probably wasn't on purpose, but I love the idea of we're going to do the hero story first, and then we're going to do the villain story second, and then we're going to have them all clash in this, you know, one movie and this one event film. And I don't know, I'm just, I have goosebumps thinking about this because I just love how M. Night Shyamalan has basically designed his own franchise out of this.
Yeah, cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm. But what did you think about it, Gene?
Yeah, I loved everything about this trailer. It looks incredible. You know, it's everything you would want as a sequel to Unbreakable and Split. You know, I was a fan of Unbreakable for a few years before Split came out, and that reveal really blew me away. I was like so surprised, and I just loved it. And you know, the fact that M. Night Shyamalan gets to go back and create like his own, like, you know, like superhero extravaganza is just so incredible. And especially you know, after many many years past. It looks great.
And it looks, and I give Shyamalan props to this, but it looks very much the same movie, or it looks very similar to the first movie. You know, and that movie was made almost 20 years ago. Yeah. So kudos on him for making this movie look visually in tone with, you know, the first movie and a little bit of the last movie as well. So, you know, kudos to M. Night Shyamalan. So, this was my favorite trailer. It was so impactful. It worked on an emotional level, and I mean, it just rocketed, like, you know, everything. It just, like, that final shot of Glass at the end, or of not Glass, the two, the Beast and David falling into basically what looks like more water. Like, that's incredible. You know, I loved it. I'm excited for January. It's coming out in January.
Yeah, definitely. The best movie of January, I'm sure.
You know, I mean, January, we say that, but it surprise us.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, Gene, do you have any more thoughts on Comic-Con?
No, I don't think so. Just everyone should probably go once in their lifetime.
As someone who's never been to a comic book convention, I would say, from hearing from all of what everyone says about Comic-Con, it sounds, or San Diego Comic-Con, it sounds like a blast. Mm-hmm. But you might like once or twice in your life.
Yeah.
Because it's because especially if you're doing the Hall H thing, because it's just, you know, so many people in a room and all that.
Yeah.
So with that, Gene, where can the good people find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, Gene9892. And you can follow the Waffle Press on iTunes, on SoundCloud, and YouTube. You just search the Waffle Press, and you'll find some good videos there. We're always professionally unprofessional, so yeah, check it out.
I'll have links for those in the description below. Please check out the Waffle Press. It's doing well. Didn't you guys cross the 300 subscriber mark?
Yes, we did. Hopefully, some listener will make it 301 or something.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations. And me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow the show at The Youth Critic for updates. You can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHD Network. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you later this week with Mission Impossible Fallout.
Nice. Yeah.
Tim Burton was going to take all of those powers away.
There was going to be a cameo by Batman.
Brainiac was going to be the villain in the movie.
The Superman Doomsday battle in the subway, I think it was underground.
We were doing a lot of research with schools of fish and how they turn, or birds in the air, how they turn in space.
Chris Rock came into work one day on Dog, and he was like, guess who's playing Jimmy Olsen?
I remember him sort of complaining about making superhero movies. He compared it to Chinese water torture.
If we had been able to strip through all of this sort of chaos, I think we could have had an interesting movie.
It's a movie I'd still like to see. Plus, I would have been able to do a lot of cool monsters.
It's uncovering the past. I love it.
It's kind of haunted me in a way, you know, the what if of it.
It's the one costume I've never gotten to really make that I've always thought would have been, like, amazing.
The death of Superman Lives, what happened? You're going to find out. Kevin Smith's going to help tell it.
I got involved. That's what happened. And then it died. It was truly the death of Superman.